Hello, everybody, and welcome to Teal Tinted Glasses Barracuda After Dark, a Teal Town USA podcast. With you tonight is myself, Ian Reed. Let me turn myself off so I can't hear myself in my ear. Excellent. So here we are, first game of the Western Conference Final for the Calder Cup playoffs, and the Barracuda obviously did not get off to a great start at all. Down to, they're down 3-1 in the series. Not a good place to be in. So let's kind of take a look at some of the numbers here quick before we just start talking about the game itself. It was a 3-1 final, obviously. The Barracuda were outshot by the Griffins by a margin of 28 to 27. I think that's really misleading because the Barracuda took a ton of shots in the third period, but really, they weren't very threatening shots. They weren't very good shots. They were shots on just poor low percentage angles from the outside. You got to give the Grand Rapids Griffins a lot of credit. They really controlled the game from start to finish, basically. They outshot the Barracuda in the first, got out to that nice 2-0 lead. Yes, Kevin LeBanc did come out and cut the lead, but then, in the third period again, Grand Rapids got a goal, and that was really all they needed because they controlled the game from start to finish. And so I would do my best not to be misled by the 28 to 27 shot margin. This game was never close, in my opinion, anyway. I mean, your mileage may vary. But in my opinion, not so much. See what's going on in the chat. Oh, hey, people are watching. Good. Cool. Good news is that Hockey Jerk is going to try and join us at some point soon. So stay tuned for that. I get to tap dance without anybody. This is normal stuff for Barracuda After Dark. The power play, obviously a huge concern tonight. 0 for 6 is what I'm seeing, but 0 for 7 wouldn't shock me either. That's a problem. The Barracuda really couldn't get set up. They really couldn't, do much. It seemed like every time they got set up, and even if they did get set up, then they would overpass or try to overplay the puck, which I think ended up, very badly, badly, badly. Laurel's tap dancing with you, and I like it. Look, they did seem a little rusty. And I'm not super worried though. I'll be more worried tomorrow if the Griffins can, really do this to the Barracuda again tomorrow, I think then I'll start being concerned. But the Barracuda, they went into last year. They didn't look very good against the Gulls in game one of last series either. And they here they are in the third round. So I'm gonna, I'm not trying to get too downed. I don't want to look too much into, I don't want to look too far into this one game and be like, okay, well, now it's over. But let's not say Grand Rapids isn't a good team. I think, I spoke very highly of the Griffins coming, into the series. This is a team that has gotten scoring from basically throughout their lineup, where the Sharks have, or, sorry, the Sharks, the Barracuda, have been, they've had to really lean on a couple of players, guys like Ryan Carpenter, guys like Timo Meier, for example. I think that they've relied, maybe not so much on the score sheet, but I think they've relied on him for play. I don't know. I'm pretty content with, I'm not content with how the game went, but I'm content with the fact that it's only game one. I'm not too worried yet. I don't think anyone should be slamming on the panic button. Although the power play going dead is definitely a concern because they had issues with their power play against Stockton, who was, a far more together team than the Gulls were. The Gulls team we played, or not we, they played, you know, they were depleted. They have a lot of big guns that are playing with the big club right now in the NHL, you know, playing in the Western Conference Finals for the Ducks. So, you know, not to take anything away from the Barracuda, but the Gulls team wasn't what it was during the regular season. It wasn't the team that we were concerned with watching during the course of the regular season, just because of the way that they could be dominant at times. And it's not to say that the goals were, you know, a complete pushover, but they were definitely depleted. And this Grand Rapids team, obviously, you know, Detroit never made the playoffs, so this team's been together the whole time. And I think that definitely, you know, that helps them. That's definitely a feather in their cap. The one other thing about this game too, as I tap dance around here, was just the number of people that came in and out of the game. It seemed like every time I turned around, somebody important was going like back into the dressing room. And then, you know, most of them came back out, but definitely concerned, especially at the end, watching Ryan Carpenter get walked off the ice. Obviously, that would be a serious issue going forward should anything have come of that. And yeah, the late penalty by Sorensen, Mike Nev saying about the late penalty by Sorensen. Yeah, look, it was a brutal penalty. Hockey, you know, hockey, you're going to take one generally when this stuff goes down, and you're going to take the retaliation guy. Sorensen took a bad, stupid retaliation penalty. You know, and that's not to say, look, the Griffins were kind of getting their licks in. You know, there's a lot of questionable stuff after the whistle that the Griffins were doing to get the Barracuda going, but you know, that's playoff hockey. So I didn't like the FIFO goal either, but you know, look, when you only get one, you know, when you're the whole play's basically in your end, the Barracuda have relied on Grosnick to bail them out of one too many games, and he can't do it every single game. It's just an unrealistic, unfair expectation for Grosnick to have to do that. So I didn't like the goal, but I'm certainly not gonna throw, you know, a guy like Grosnick under the bus here. I didn't like it, but it's, you know what, Grosnick's been really good this playoff so far, and we'll have to see what happens, right? We're gonna have to see what happens going forward. I think it's gonna be a rough game. Gonna be a rough series. Look, I don't think that I didn't think the Barracuda were just gonna, you know, steamroll through this series. The Griffins are a good team. The Griffins are a team that I've liked pretty much the whole year. You know, this has been a good team, and you know, I thought they played the Barracuda pretty good the times that they both played in the regular season, even though that the Barracuda took both of those games. I feel, especially the second one, you know, that was a closer game. I can't remember how the first one went, but I don't remember it being crazy. But it's so long ago that now everything kind of just bleeds together, and everything was a blowout victory for the Barracuda. Trying to avoid dead air here. Other news going on in the NHL. You have the Nashville Predators tonight. They went up. They went up 3-2 on the Anaheim Ducks, which is nice to see considering they were pretty depleted. I think when Ryan Johansson went down, I think a lot of people were concerned about that. Mike Neff's getting me back on topic, asking me, does Stortini draw into the Game 2 lineup? I don't think so. I don't think they really need him to. Especially if you can get Charche back in, that's going to be key for the Barracuda, I think. Missing Charche for this third, for this series specifically, I think is going to really, really hurt them, because Charche is a guy who, you know, can really make things happen, and he makes things go well. So I don't know. I feel like Stortini, I don't think you need to go that route. Like they've got enough sandpaper in that lineup already. Like I don't think Stortini is going to bring you much of anything. I think that a guy like Stortini, you bring him in and you're just kind of playing into the Griffins' hands, you know? They're going to try and get you going after the whistle, and they're going to try and look for, you know, basically they're going to try and draw you into the things that Sorensen got bit on, where they scored their power play goal. And I think that, you know, that's the kind of stuff you want to avoid. And if you bring a guy like Stortini in, then you're going to play into that game a little bit, because Stortini, not exactly known for his calm, you know, gentlemanly demeanor after the whistle. So I think, you know, when you look at that, I think that's a thing you don't really want to do. How do I sound, by the way, people in the chat? Because I'm using a new headset, so I'm curious just how clear I am. The awesome dead air as I wait for answers. Do 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 do. Do 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 do. All right. Well, yes, M. Hackle saying that Gibson did go down, which obviously is problematic for the Ducks. I did notice. I was kind of watching the game. I've been really, really, really busy. Nice. Okay. Mike Nev's saying this is awesome. So I'm impressed. This week's been crazy. Last couple of weeks have been crazy with school. This is for those that don't know, I'm in an accelerated program, so I go right through to August. And this lasts, so basically it's broken up into modules, because each semester I actually do two modules. So I do probably basically I do two semesters worth of work in a semester. And so in this module right now has been awful. I just there's no other way to say it. It's been awful. It's been all the work. So that is why, if you've noticed, I've been really quiet on Twitter lately, especially during the week. That's why I've just been 100% focused on school. So I apologize for that. I have a moth or something flying around me. So for those watching on the video and they're wondering what the hell I was just doing, I was trying to catch the moth and I failed. Back to hockey. So yeah, so the Ducks facing elimination going back to the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. I really hope the Ducks go out, because look, the Ducks, you served your purpose. You lost your draft pick. You kept all your guys away from the goals. It's time to go away now. It's just, you know, go away. I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Ryan Getzlaf and this whole homophobic slur thing. Obviously, it's bad. You know, obviously it's not something you want to see in this day and age. It's just it's not acceptable. And I thought his deflection of it was kind of lame. It's hard. I don't know if I would go into like suspensions or whatnot. I don't know if I'm all the way there, but I was, you know, it's not something that you need to have in the game. I wish it's just something we don't need. You know, and this is somebody who grew up at a time where, you know, that was the norm. And you know, I'm sure I've uttered a bajillion about it. You know, I've used a bajillion of them at certain points in my life, but you know, I like to think that you know, we can move beyond this kind of stuff. And it's really unfortunate when this happens in sports, because I think this happens, you know, it's weird because it feels like it happens in like spurts. Ryan Getzlaf used a homophobic slur on the ice and he got caught, and it's just, you know, it's not acceptable. Yeah, he did get the highest fine possible, but when you're talking a guy making, you know, $7 million a year, a $10,000 fine doesn't really, you know, what is that? It's negotiated though. I mean, you know, this is on the this isn't just the league. It's on the league, it's on the players, it's kind of just on everyone, right? Because these things are negotiated in the CBA. So you would like to see the players and the league kind of come together to take a little more seriously, but it is what it is. Mike Neff's pointing out that he just wants to point out that Ryan and Heed both were -2 while DeSimone was even. Ryan and Heed also draw the toughest competition. What am I studying? I am studying office admin right now, so I'm doing a lot of writing and proposals and letters and just all kinds of busy stuff that keeps me very busy. Yeah, super busy. I just wrote a over the last 2 weeks, I just wrote a 70 something page proposal and that I just finished on Thursday night, and on Monday I start a new one. It's pretty terrible. And Mike Neves is making fun of me, and that's fine. What else is going on here today? Kevin LeBanc had a nice goal in this game. It was nice because, you know, it was a nice quick response to try and stop the bleeding a little bit because obviously the Griffins did come out, and I like that Kevin LeBanc goal. Thought it was really good. You know, Kevin LeBanc's a guy who has really turned around his game since earlier in the playoffs, so it's good to see that continued into this round. When does this semester end? This semester, the whole semester will end in August, but this module ends in middle of June somewhere. After that, then everything's going to be better again. After I get through this module, it starts to really calm down significantly as far as workload goes. This is the worst one. Just because the amount of work that's expected in multiple classes, it makes it very difficult. The proposals we're writing really, like, and it's not just even me. They really eat a lot of time, and it's been really hard to get stuff finished in my other classes because the proposals are worth so much of my final mark, and some of the work in my other classes are worth significantly less that. It's hard. So the full semester will end in August, but middle of June I will hopefully be a lot less stressed out and more back on Twitter talking about probably the draft and everything else. And yeah, it is. It really is. Christine saying it's the mental version of being in the last log of the playoffs. It really is, man. This is my finals right now. If I can make it through this, then we're good, and I can go parade after. Have I watched the Memorial Cup? I saw in the chat from Leggy Dragonboard above, and I missed that question. I have had it on as background noise a little bit. I haven't been able to watch the round robin as much as I would like to. But I'm hoping that will change. Hopefully tomorrow I'll actually sit down and watch a whole game. But so far it's been, from what little I've seen, it's been pretty good. Just making sure I'm not missing anything on the Twitters. And yeah. Other NHL fun stuff, as I just kind of bounce around here. Tomorrow is going to be the wonderful game, but I think it's game five tomorrow for Pittsburgh Ottawa. That should be interesting. You know what? It's weird because, like, Ottawa's so bad, and yet they keep being good, and it makes no sense to me. And I just I they could win the cup, and I don't think I would still accept that they were good. Yeah, Urie's looked great. Do the Sharks have any prospects that are currently still alive? No. Everyone got eliminated during various rounds of the their playoffs, I think. I'm trying to think of who made it the furthest. Maybe Blake. No, not Blake. I think Weirder maybe. Playing in the queue. But yeah, no one currently playing right now is represented by Sharks prospects, which is actually the first in the last 2 years. The Sharks have had some pretty good representation at the Memorial Cup, but this year not so much. And I think it's just because when you look at the number of kids we have in other places right now, we don't have a ton of junior kids right now. We have Darren Radish isn't Sharks property. He's come to camp a few times, but he's never been locked down by a contract, so he's not technically our property. He's just been a training camp invite, which sometimes translates into a contract down the road, or other times, you know, he might be under pretty high demand and another team might scoop him up. Yeah, Blickfeld round two in the WHL. I can't remember how far Ruin Duranda made it. I think they might have made it to their to the third round. I don't want to say conference finals because their playoffs are all weird where they just go one through. There's not really divisions or conferences in their playoffs. They just go 1-18 or 1-16, sorry. And they just keep reseeding until it's done, which would be interesting to see if they did that in the NHL. Yeah, well, you know, Fox Sports, that's what they do. But as far as I know, I mean, I would have to double check with Zach, but I'm pretty sure that he is not actually one of our prospects. He's just been to camp a few times. But that's something I'll definitely hit Zach up with on Twitter at some point and get to the bottom of that. But as far as I know, that's the case. If I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will come on and correct me. Bum, 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 bum. Man. What else is going on, man? Like I said, I haven't really been watching a whole lot of hockey. I can tell you what's going on. I mean, this game was pretty cut and dry. Barracuda not good enough at all. Yeah, just not good enough. John McCarthy, Mike Nev's asking, what value does John McCarthy bring to the CUDA? John McCarthy is he's a steady presence in the room. I think he brings a lot of veteran leadership. I think, you know, he's a guy that works hard. John McCarthy may not be the biggest goal threat, although he seems to really just heat up at one point in the season and just start, you know, filling the net. But I think he just, you know, he's a guy who's been around the AHL for a long time, and he knows his role. He knows that, you know, for him, likely that's his final destination. So I think, you know, he cares a lot about the team. He cares about the team first. He's not, you know, he's not preoccupied with, what's in it for him and how can he make it to the big club. And, you know, he's there to really keep the ship righted on the Barracuda level. And I think that's important to have in your room, because there's obviously going to be a lot of guys in there that are going to be, you know, focused on just getting to the NHL. And, you know, I need to look good so I can get to the NHL, where you need a guy like John McCarthy who is going to take care of the team first. And look, and I'm not saying, you know, it makes it sound really bad, like all prospects are, yeah, like a lurk, exactly. Like all prospects are bad. I mean, prospects are great, but, you know, there's some guys that, you know, they're going to just stay in the AHL. That's as good as it's going to get for them. And I think you don't want to like completely have too many of them. Previous Sharks affiliates have had far too many of those guys to prospects, and I think that's unhealthy. But overall, you know, I think they're a guy like John McCarthy is really, really important to have on the team. I hope that answers that good. Any other questions? Will we tap dance? I think Jerk's coming. We're hoping. We're crossing our fingers. Yeah, well, that's true. You know, there's a lot of guys that that shouldn't have made it. Like I'm saying that they said, Martin St-Louis would never make it. There's a lot of guys that said, Dan Boyle wasn't supposed to make it either. Guys that have gone on, there's been guys that have gone undrafted and had Hall of Fame careers. I mean, you never know. I just feel like at his age, though, at John McCarthy's age, like Martin St-Louis really broke through at a younger age. Like these guys, when you're starting to get into your late 20s, early 30s, especially late 20s, then that's when the window really starts to shut for you. Which is why I'm concerned about having a guy like Ryan Carpenter back next year, or a guy like Trey Groesnick. Those windows are closing on those guys. These fringe players. Laurel asking the ultimate question: is a hot dog a sandwich? No, it's not a sandwich, it's a hot dog. I don't care what anyone says. It's a hot dog. No, Mike Nev's asking if I've heard the latest Gackle podcast. I have a complete utter backlog of podcasts that I need to go back and listen to at some point. And I'm sure I will get to it. Christine's asking what the starting salary is for an AHL player. AHL player, like someone who's just in the AHL, they're not making, they don't make too much. A lot of these guys can make 20, 30 grand, I think. I've never really looked, but I know it's not a lot. Because if you look at a guy, even on a two-way deal, they might make, 900,000 for, if they're in the NHL, but they're making like a tenth of that in the AHL. So a guy who's strictly just on a depends on the type of player. I shouldn't say that because it depends on the type of player. Because there's some guys that can be on a one-way deal that are good at the AHL level and they can still make some pretty decent coin. So it wouldn't be surprising to see a guy like John McCarthy probably making 100,000, 125. Thousand. And we are now joined live by Mr. Hockey Jerk.
Hello, hello, hello.
How you doing?
Oh, doing well. How are you doing?
I watched the game, so I'm not.
Well, I was there, so.
How was the crowd?
You know what? I mean, I feel like we've said it for the last 10 or 12 games in a row, but I feel like it was the biggest crowd the Barracuda have had. And, towards the end of the game when it was very clearly out of reach, they did the little crowd pump up things and the crowd was still into it, waving their towels. So
Hey.
I really think they were just happy to see some hockey.
Nice. That's awesome. Did they burn any cop cars after the game or anything like that? Or are we okay?
I think we're doing okay. When the Griffins got their empty net goal, I saw there were a handful of people who got up and left. But I feel even for the most part, even at the end of the game, there was a handful of people still in the seats, which they got a post game little show with somebody on the Griffins throwing a right hand right into Timo Meier's face.
You see, it's funny because I was talking about that. There you go. Matt saying McCarthy's at 600,000, which means he's on an NHL deal, I think, then, because he'd have he's on he must be on a two-way deal then to be on Pat
I
Fraley.
you know what? I think his deal for next year is an AHL exclusive deal,
Oh, there
but
you
don't quote me on that.
I won't. I'm trying to just keep up in the chat. What how do the Barracuda get out of this? Like, 'cause they just got manhandled tonight, I thought. Like, just start to finish, the Griffins really pushed the play on this game.
Yeah, I thought the Barracuda looked good for the first 10 minutes of the first period, and that was about it. And those of you who know that I'm not a big fan of, cliches and sayings and whatnot, but honestly, I think to get back in the series, the Barracuda just need to get back to get back to Barracuda hockey. You know, I mean, we've seen all season, you know, they make the most out of their power play and they get, you know, frequent high quality shots and they really include the defense. There were so many times where, you know, O'Regan or somebody had the puck along the wall and I'm thinking, okay, go back to the point here and let's get a shot for a rebound. And
right.
Went blindly into the slot and it's like, okay, that's not something we've seen at all this year, so I don't know why they're doing it all of a sudden.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The thing that I found really frustrating, especially in the third period, because like if you just look at the numbers alone, you think, oh, this game wasn't that bad, but a lot of those shots, and I know I'm not the only one saying this, I know Zach mentioned it on Twitter as well, that you know, those shots weren't good.
No, they were not. There were a lot of shots that were just straight into Coro, and there were a lot too that were definitely going wide, and Coro still made an effort to catch it. So I think right. by that logic, it still counts as a shot on goal, even though it was going wide.
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe
I will say the numbers. Do make the Barracuda look better than they actually were.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm not ready to, you know, trade everybody and fire everybody and start setting cars on fire. You know, I still think that even though the Barracuda have met their, you know, match in the Griffins, I still think the Barracuda have the slight edge on them. And I think that they can, you know, gain some more momentum and push the series further along.
Yeah, I think if, you know, if they get walked tomorrow, then I'm worried. But right now, it's just a game. The Barracuda, you know, after long layoffs have just not been good.
Exactly. And you know, you see in the NHL, like a lot of games in a short amount of time, you know, the Sharks would, you know, kind of be dragging by the end of it, while I feel like the Barracuda almost thrive on having a lot of games. You know, there were so many, you know, night Saturday games and then Sunday afternoon games where the Barracuda were just, you know, bang, bang, bang the whole weekend and they won both games. And even like, you know, a Thursday, a Friday, and a Sunday, they were pretty consistent throughout the whole time. So I think the Barracuda they got a little rusty with the extended time off. And so I think once they get back into the swing of things, you know, get a couple more skates in, kind of feel out the Griffins. And, you know, something I noted too was in the Stockton series, you know, which is a team that the Barracuda saw 10 times in the regular season.
Right.
I feel like there were some spots in that series where it was just, you know, and, you know, the Griffins played the Barracuda only twice this season. And I don't think at all last season.
No.
And it felt like there was an incredible amount of hatred in just the first game.
Yeah. Yeah. No, really. It really was. I was surprised by by some of the animosity early on. And I think that we kind of watched this with Stockton a couple of games. And even in the series of San Diego, like if you can get the Barracuda to do stupid stuff, they will do stupid stuff. Like even at the end there, when Meyer got the punch in the face, I don't know if it was Saw, but Meyer kind of threw a jab first, but the other guy just landed so well that, you know, it looked as much worse than it was because Meyer kind of took the initial swing at the guy.
Yeah, and, you know, credit to the Griffins. They definitely did a really good job of getting the Barracuda to commit some stupid penalties, and when the Barracuda were fortunate enough to get a power play, the Griffins' penalty kill was just on them the whole time, and they were very suffocating, even 5-5 as well.
Yeah, and they couldn't, like, the Barracuda had a hard time. I think, you know, a lot of it you have to give credit to the Griffins for how they played, but I think there's also a lot of it where you have to look and say, wow, you know, like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're not doing yourself, like, the Griffins all over you, and then, like, some of the stupid passes they were making are just overpassing, and it's just like, what are you doing? You know, like if these guys are going to smother everything you're doing, maybe you want to kind of simplify it a little bit, you know, get some shots, look for rebounds, which I think is, you know, at the point where you're dealing with the things that the Barracuda were dealing with how the Griffins were smothering them and just all over them. you kind of wish that they'd kind of simplified it a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what? You bring up a really good point too, because you know, I was kind of worried that this was going to be an issue too, but for those who aren't in the area, like you yourself, it was a crisp 90 degrees Fahrenheit in San Jose today.
Ooh, right.
And, you know, I could tell from the get-go, you know, I sat down in my seat, which is in the lower bowl, and, you know, I knew right away, I was like, it does not feel cold right now. So there's going to be some issues here, no doubt. And, you know, we saw, especially in the neutral zone, I can't tell you how many guys were just appeared to be tripping over themselves. And there was one instance, right. I think it was DeSimone was bringing the puck into the zone, and it seriously looked like he tripped over the faceoff dot.
Do you think that, because we saw a lot of players get, we saw a lot of players making trips to the training room this game. Do you think the ice had a part to play in that, or was it just that was just how physical the game was?
You know what? I think it's a little bit of both, just because I noted pretty much after every whistle, there was, you know, shoving and little slashes and face washes, right, and all the normal stuff that you would see in a big-time rivalry game. but you know what? I can tell you, just as somebody who has a little bit of ice hockey and ice skating in general experience, you know, if the ice isn't up to standard and, you know, let's say you stop a certain way or you turn a certain way, you could really tweak your foot or your ankle or something like that. Or,
sure,
you know, you hit a rut and you go down. And I think that's kind of what we saw with Nikita Yevpilov's. Like, yes, he absolutely obliterated the guy with his elbow, but
he did.
You know, there's nothing saying that, you know, he didn't hit a rut and just go flying and land right on, you know, his kneecap or his shin or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that was scary, obviously. And then, you know, seeing Yevpilov go down like that, I mean, he did kind of come back, but without, you know, without Chartier, like, this team just really can't afford any more injuries. I feel like, especially against the Griffins, this Griffins team going to give them everything they can handle. And then they're probably going to, you know, if they're fortunate to pull out this, you know, this series, whoever plays them next is going to continue to do the same. It doesn't really get easier from here.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's why I said the Barracuda need to get back to playing Barracuda hockey. You know, the Barracuda made their coin on, you know, getting everybody, the defense included, in on the scoring, and, you know, just being really simple, you know, break the puck out, take the easy passes. And, you know, that's not to say the Barracuda are lazy by any stretch. No. It shows that they're smart, you know, and they, right, say, okay, I can, you know, between the legs, no look over the back to this guy who's on a breakaway, and it'll maybe probably work, or I can break it out from the defensive zone to the opposing blue line and we can get a shot on goal and maybe a rebound. You know, it's stuff like that, you know, being smart with what you're doing and not slowing down the game, but just kind of letting every possible outcome kind of run through your mind as you're performing the action. And I think that's where the Barracuda make a lot of their coin, is not rushing things.
Yeah, no, I would concur with that. Absolutely. Well, I was going to ask something, and I don't remember what now. More dead air. What am I doing? Mike Neff saying, too bad Grand Rapids didn't have Peter Mrazek in net. I don't want Peter Mrazek in net. Jared Coro isn't that good.
Well, you know what? I was going to disagree with you. I was going to say they had Jared Coro, who played pretty well tonight, and is a veteran of an NHL outdoor game, so automatically,
oh, that's true,
he is above all of us.
That's true. I don't think he's been particularly, I don't think his numbers are anything noteworthy over the playoff run, though.
You know what, I don't have the stats on front of me, but I would agree with you, just because I feel like if he was kind of stealing some games, I feel like we would be hearing more about it, you know. And that's kind of what gives me a glimmer of hope going into tomorrow and then the series as a whole, is, you know, I would argue that the forwards for both teams are even, and, yeah, you know, the Barracuda and the Griffins both have some very talented scorers and some very talented players in general, you know, I think the Barracuda have the edge in defense. You know, the Barracuda do a really good job of getting their defense in on the scoring, and just they probably have one of the most mobile back ends in the AHL. And I had this conversation with friend of the show Zach Devine a couple days ago, and he said that there were a lot of you know, flashes of just one guy here and another guy there, and it doesn't sound like as a whole the unit is very impressive. I mean, of course, I'm no expert. I don't watch the Griffins all year, but Zach is a smart guy, and if he says that's what it is, then I'm going to trust him on it.
Yeah, I feel like the Griffins, like when we were talking about this series after game five or game whatever it was, game six, game five, six, I don't remember. What did we win in five?
The goals was in five.
Yeah, okay, the goals were five. So after game five, I feel like something we said a lot was like, you know, the Griffins, they've really gotten their scoring from everywhere. There's no one guy like a Carpenter carrying them around. Jared Coro has a 2.47 GAA and a 0.914 save percentage. So nothing super fantastic. Not terrible by any stretch, but nothing ungodly either.
Right, and I feel like he's, you know, he's at least in that range of, like, average and above average. You know, he's kind of bouncing it between there. And if you have if you have forwards like the Griffins do up front, then it kind of makes your night as a goalie easier.
Correct.
And, you know, you could see, you know, 40 shots on goal and five of them go in, and that's an okay save percentage. Or, you know, you let in two goals on four shots and it looks like crap, you know? It's I mean, save percentage, yes, it is the stat, but it's like it's so one way or the other. You know, I feel like when it comes to save percentage and stuff like that, you kind of have to see the goalie in action to kind of know where they're at.
Well, especially in the playoffs, because it's such a smaller, like, in a I find it's a hard stat to really put too much faith in as far as like how good a goalie actually is in the playoffs, because it's such a smaller sample size than a regular season. Like, yes, when you get this far into the playoffs, then okay, I guess save percentage does become a little bit, you know, but I don't think I don't think you should too overly judge a goalie by a sample size of one playoff runs goal, you know, save percentage.
Yeah, I agree too. And you know, playoff runs can be, especially in the AHL, they can be as short as three games or as long as, you know, 15, maybe more. So there's, you know, there's so many different ways that you can slice it when it comes to a goalie. You know, you factor in the stats and you factor in, you know, the eye test and how many shots do they see. And you know what? A lot of it, too, I mean, no doubt Troy Grosnick has played awesome this year, but the Barracuda defense as a whole does a really good job of keeping the puck away from him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I didn't realize I was making noise. It was my insulin. Laurel was asking me what I was playing with, if I was playing with a fidgety toy, and I was actually just, I was trying to take some insulin. What did you think of, to just kind of jump around here, since, I feel like between the two of us, we've probably covered this game pretty good. What did you think? Speaking of goaltending, were you surprised that Matt Murray in Pittsburgh got the start after we had one bad game?
You know, that's so hard to say, because if you look at the game started for the regular season, it's very obvious that Matt Murray was the guy. And Fleury was kind of the support guy.
Right.
And, you know, I said it for the first two rounds, you know, if the playoffs ended today and Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup, I'm giving the Conn Smythe to Marc-Andre Fleury. But, I mean, it's so hard to say, because on one hand, you know, Fleury has played so well that you want him to keep the net, you know, but at the same time, Pittsburgh made it abundantly clear during the regular season that Matt Murray was their guy. And I think at the end of the day, they want to move forward with Matt Murray.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, I mean, this really, that's the writing on the wall, right? There's no, cause I think you, when you look at, like you said, I think Marc-Andre Fleury has been really, really good this playoff run. Yeah. That game that he had, you know, where he got pulled out of and it was awful, but he's been so good, like, this playoff run. Like, Pittsburgh, yeah, they have a lot of weapons, and they're probably, you know, on paper, the best team in the playoffs still. But Marc-Andre Fleury has really carried a lion's share of that work through the first few rounds. And so, I you know, it surprises me, because you would think after playing so well that he would have a better chance of holding the net. And, you know, I mean, the writing's really on the wall for him now.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I think really what it all boils down to is they know that Matt Murray is the guy. And if you know that he's going to be your starting goalie, why not just play him now? I mean, it's a crappy thing to say, just because, you know, we are talking about people here, but sure. I almost wonder if Marc-Andre Fleury in the first two rounds of the playoffs was almost like a, hey, this is what you're getting if you trade for him.
Right.
You know, and like you said too, all the credit in the world to Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, he's had to play some hard minutes, especially with a very depleted defensive core. I mean,
yes.
You look at that decor, like Ian Cole has been burned more times than I can count these playoffs, and I don't think they've played totally awful. I mean, Chad Ruedel is kind of a new face to things, and same as, you know, Carter Rowney, but still, that decor is very inexperienced, and Marc-Andre Fleury's had to pick up a lot of slack.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting thing you bring up, too, because, you know, it's like, who's going to get him? Because you got to even think, like, even if Marc-Andre Fleury had some weird thing in the back of his head that he might be able to stick around, or, you know, at this point, am I not going wherever the hell they send me at this point?
Yeah, exactly. Especially because with any type of NHL player, whether you're a goalie or a player or whatever, you know, your first goal is you want to play and you want to be the guy. And
right.
Especially as a goalie who's now has two Stanley Cups, you know, you can act like you have the biggest, you know, male anatomy in the world. And, you know, you want to show that you can start every game and win every game. And so right. I think that's kind of what would make Fleury more open to going to not necessarily a contender, just because it gives you even more slack to kind of show what you got, you know.
But potentially he could go to a contender. I mean, there's going to be a couple of decent teams that are going to be looking for a goalie, or at least maybe not Stanley Cup contenders, but definitely playoff contenders that are going to be looking for goalies. You know, I mean, look at Dallas might try to hit $20 million in goaltending.
I was just going to say, Jim Neal said he's open to trading the number three pick.
Oh, man. $20 million. First, the two goalies, the other two are going to learn to play defense. It's going to be awesome.
Well, so what they can do is, you know how sometimes they'll, like, teams who can't make a decision will have a home captain and an away captain,
right?
They could have a home goalie tandem and an away goalie tandem.
Wow, that would be epic. Antti Niemi gets bought out, right?
If you know what, if he doesn't get traded, and I honestly was thinking we were going to see Niemi be the backup in Pittsburgh next year for Marc-Andre Fleury. That I was so sure that that's what was going to happen, just because it made so much sense. But now, probably gets bought out and signs in the Liga in Finland.
I wouldn't be surprised. Mike Neff said, if Nashville wins the cup before San Jose, he gives up. I get that sentiment. I understand it.
I don't get that sentiment.
Well, I feel like...
Go ahead, sorry.
Okay, no, let me go first here. I feel like it's kind of like, I understand the whole, like, they've been here less time than us, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, you know, this is David Poile. Like, I know he's up for GM of the Year this year, and I think GM of the Year is such a stupid award because it's so short-sighted. Like, ooh, Peter Chiarelli, GM of the Year, because he drafted McDavid. Yep, good job. But, like, with Nashville, I mean, you really, from a team construction, how you have to really admire what David Boyle's done in Nashville. The way he's, you know, so much that there's a lot of talent there that's homegrown, but he's also been able to swing the big trades to bring in guys that matter as well. You know, bringing in PK Subban, bringing in Ryan Johansson. You know, those things are, the, you know, that's what I like, is the fact that he's been able to develop his team so well. And then, you know, have those extra parts so he could make it. You know, you can trade a Seth Jones for a Ryan Johansson. You know, you can trade a Shea Weber for a PK Subban because Mark Bergevin's drinking. Like, it's, you can do those things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it just goes to show how good David Poile is when it comes to recognizing his needs and recognizing his surpluses. You know, I mean, it's not often when you can look at a guy like Seth Jones, who for a majority of his draft year was supposed to go number one,
right,
and be like, yeah, this guy's good, but we don't need him, so we can just get rid of him for something we actually need. And
yep.
You know, GM of the year nominations, obviously it's a cool little accolade you can put in your trophy case or, you know, whatever. But call me crazy, but is acknowledging when you have a surplus and using that to fulfill a need,
mm-hmm.
shouldn't that just qualify you as a job?
Well, I mean, Mike Milbury was a GM at one point, so I guess not.
This is true, but I mean...
I mean, we've seen some really, really bad GMs in this league.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, Rafi yeah. Torres did almost score 30 goals. It just wasn't on the Islanders.
That's true.
So... That's true.
Yeah. I don't like the GM of the Year award because I think it's too short-sighted. I think that judging a GM, like the way it's handed out, like it's just handed out to make it so simple for fans, right? Like it's baby food for fans because it doesn't really, like, it for me, like the GM, it should look at, you know, whatever. It shouldn't be just like, I drafted Connor McDavid and now my team is good. Like, no shit.
And who else is, I know it's David Poile and it's Peter Chiarelli, and who's the third one? Is it Ottawa's GM?
I think it's Peter Dorion, which I guess, I mean, my team's bad, and but we're still in the playoffs.
They traded for a 3-4 possibly fifth defenseman who's making $7 million. Like, oh great.
Yeah, like I don't get it, right? Like, there's Ottawa. I thought you got beat in a trade this year by Desjardins. Or what's his name? Yeah, Willie Desjardins, right? No, that was the... Who is the general manager in Vancouver?
It's Jim Benning.
Jim Benning, right. Yeah. You got beat by Jim Benning in a trade. Very clearly. Very obviously.
If Jim Benning fleeces you in a trade, you might as well just retire.
Pretty much. Like, you know, that goes for you, Mr. Doug Wilson. Actually, I don't know if we got fleeced there, but Ottawa got fleeced. They got destroyed in that. The Burroughs trade?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Burroughs as a rental, I don't think it was an awful trade. The thing that stands out to me is that they extended Burroughs mm-hmm. without knowing exactly what they had in him, because... You know, you can say this about a handful of guys, but nobody from that team has really been the same since the 2011 Cup run.
Right.
And you look at the player that Vancouver got. I don't remember his first name off the top of my head, but I know he's Ulf Dahlin's son.
Yes. Jonathan, you know, Dahlin. I mean, that kid's yes. crazy good.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm fairly certain. I don't believe he's in the Swedish Hockey League. I think he's in the league that's just below the Swedish Hockey League, but I'm fairly certain he led that entire league in points.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Jonathan Dahlin's a guy I was really, really high on in his draft year, and the fact, yeah, I mean, look at, he's one of the best young players that's probably not playing in North America right now. Like, for kids that are like, you know, 20 and under that aren't playing in North America, I think Jonathan Dahlin might be number one on my list.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he has the benefit of playing in Sweden. And I feel like a lot of the players who have come out of the Swedish Hockey League generally have an easier time at translating to the NHL level for whatever reason.
Mike Nez asking any Worlds talk. I honestly, I have not paid any attention to the world championships. I generally never do.
If you want to know about the world championship, follow Drew Weber.
Drew Weber has got you covered for the world championships because someone has to care.
Well, not only that, but all of the good players from the shitty teams that he follows are playing in them.
Oh, man. Oh, poor Drew. He's going to listen to this and he's going to like send us angry, scathing tweets.
I know, poor guy. I was supposed to hang out with him, and now I don't think he wants to.
I don't think he's going to want to ever again after that. That's good, though. I mean, that's really good.
I mean, I'll just let...
I think Canada's playing Russia, and I think that's going to be good. I don't know who's playing who else. I just, you look at, there's, when you look at this time of year, you've got the Stanley Cup playoffs. This year, I obviously care a little bit more about the Calder Cup playoffs than I normally would. Memorial Cup, like, it's just so on the bottom of my care list of this, you know, this non-best-on-best silly tournament that no one cares about other than Joe Weber.
But Ian, Ottawa is Canada's team, so you have to watch the NHL playoffs, right?
Don't even get me started there. Oh my god. Oh hey, you know what? I figured out something else too, just since we're bouncing all over the place. I think I know why the Barracuda are overpassing tonight.
Why is that?
Because Joe Thornton was in the press box and they had to impress him.
Yeah, that's a very good possibility.
They had to impress Jumbo. Does that make you feel, it was interesting though, because I was kind of surprised to see Jumbo in the press box. Like other guys, like it made sense, you know, like you had like what they had like Donskoy there one game, Logan Couture was another there. Game. You know, I mean, Donskoy wasn't under contract, but he was an RFA. Like he wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
Whereas like having Joe Thornton, like I wonder if there's anything to read into that, the fact that Joe Thornton was in the press box, even though he's a UFA.
You know, that's something very interesting to consider. And I didn't really think about it until you brought it up, but there, you know, Sharks are eliminated from the playoffs and you know, you find me the drugs that will convince me that Thornton is going to the Barracuda. And there honestly is just no reason for him to be there if he is, in fact, leaving San Jose.
That's my thoughts. There you go. Joe Thornton, free signing. E5.
Confirmed.
Confirmed.
You heard it here first.
Just remember, when Joe Thornton resigns, you heard it here first. But no, I mean, it surprised me because I think that when you look at it, like, really, I mean, yeah, like, hey, maybe he wants to watch a hockey game, you know? He had a sign for Mirko Mueller, it looked like.
Well, so Mirko Mueller and Joe Thornton's wife are from the same country.
That's true. That's true. I could see why. That's interesting.
How dare you talk about the Spengler Cup champion like that?
Ah, you're right. I'm sorry. My bad. My bad. But no, I thought it was really interesting. And, you know, maybe there's nothing to read into it. I mean, technically, he is still under contract until July 1st. But you would think if he wasn't coming back, he wouldn't be there, right?
Yeah, and usually with pending unrestricted free agents, the writing is usually on the wall, like... You look at Washington, I mean, Carl Alsner and Justin Williams are still under contract technically, but I will be surprised if they both re-sign just based on what they said at the locker cleanout.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught those, but they...
I didn't catch much. I caught like a lot of, you know, now is the time to trade Ovechkin hysteria, which made me laugh a little bit, but...
So basically the TLDR version...
Okay.
Is that Justin Williams said that his memories of being on this team are all disappointing ones.
Ooh. Well,
and Carl Alsner said that this team had a really wide open window for a long time and now it's closed.
Damn.
So Carl Alsner to the Maple Leafs. You hear to her Carl, first.
Yeah, there you go. Wow, we're just everything here first. Wow. Yeah, no, it's interesting, though. I mean, Justin Williams, I think I can see why he'd be disappointed coming from... I mean,
he only has 3 Stanley Cups.
Right. What a
only
jerk.
3.
Well, seriously. You know what? He was supposed to be the secret weapon. Like, it was Game 7. Clearly, you're supposed to win Game 7s with Justin Williams on your team.
Obviously.
And he didn't, so I can see why that's...
It makes me wonder if Washington really is never going to be able to get it done because they couldn't get it done with Mr. Game 7.
At that point, I mean, I know it's Pittsburgh, and I know Pittsburgh, it's kind of like all these things playing into each other, and just the fact that Pittsburgh's just in their head, I think. You know, I just think that there's... I don't know what you do if you're Washington at this point. I think you're not trading Ovechkin, let's be honest here. I can understand the case for trading Ovechkin, but Ted Leonsis isn't going to trade Ovechkin. Like, the second the GM is like, yeah, so we're going to trade Ovechkin, he's fired.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know,
you're not trading Ovechkin, and yes, you're fired.
That's what I'm saying, is I feel like the building up of Ovechkin as the Washington Capital has kind of created problems. I feel like they're stuck with him at this point.
But I don't feel like it's all his fault. Like, I know this year in previous years, I feel like Ovechkin's carried a lot of crap when guys like Backstrom weren't very good either. Now, this playoff run, Backstrom was actually pretty good, so I'm not going to just pin this on him. But I feel like the supporting cast has gotten off the hook a lot. And Ovechkin's taken an unreasonable amount of blame for that team's woes.
And it's kind of the same thing we've seen in Minnesota as well with Zach Parise. You know, like, so many years of one guy carrying the whole team. And then the one year that the star player decides to, you know, scale it back a little bit is when everybody else finally steps up. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah.
You can't win with some people. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
And I don't know what Washington does at this point now, because what have you done? You've changed the coach 18,000 times. You know, I don't think there's been a coach like in any league that hasn't coached in Washington over the past 8 years. In any league, I think they've all coached in Washington, maybe for like a weekend at a time. But like, it feels like that, though, doesn't it? Like, Washington's had so many coaches, so it's like you can't really change the coach. You've changed the GM. I mean, again, it goes back to, you know, something I've said about Doug Wilson. I mean, you know, on paper, it looks like a team that should win. And win well. Like, it's so baffling, because I honestly can't tell you what's wrong in Washington. Like,
exactly.
I can't tell you what's wrong. And it's so, if you know, and I'm not saying I'm like the be all and end all authority on hockey, but if I can't put my finger on what's going on with that team, and lots of other people can't either, I mean, then I don't know what the answer is. Like, I don't know what you do at that point that you can realistically do.
I almost wonder if, because you can't decide, I almost wonder if you just have to stay the course and let whatever happen.
Yeah, I mean, you wait until Backstrom and Ovechkin are 37, 36, 37. They'll finally make a run, and then you keep the team together the year after because you went to the Cup Final.
Yep.
Sharks East, baby. Sharks East.
I would like to see like a mini tournament of just all the teams who have been billed as the best team in any given playoff year, and they just can't get it done.
Oh, man, that'd be good. I'd like to see, like, who could choke that away.
Let's get the Sharks in there, the Capitals, obviously.
Right.
I'm trying to think of some other, you know, like, even Pittsburgh of, like, the early fans, you know?
Oh yeah, like Pittsburgh was supposed to be like Pittsburgh was after they won their cup, they were predicted to win forever, until really until Chicago happened. And then that
And
changed everything.
that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, like you said, Pittsburgh is probably the best remaining team in the playoffs, but it's only 2 years ago that they lost in the first round to the Rangers.
Right. Nope.
And even before that, they were swept by the Boston Bruins in the conference final.
Mike Dev saying Sharks are gonna regret the Burns deal. What is your thoughts on that, good sir?
I disagree with that only because Burns plays at such a high level that even if he does drop off, he'll still be an above average player. And it's been showcased multiple times that he does a really good job at keeping himself in shape and staying active. And so I don't think he will age like most hockey players do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the length. I don't like the term of the deal. I was really vocal about the term when the deal happened. Look, no one's gonna like that Shea Weber deal at the end of it, and no one's gonna like that Brent Burns or the last couple of years of it when he's still rigging the, your salary cap for 8 million. I think. And like they're saying, the contract is based on scoring, not defense. He's not a great defense. We know that though. I mean, we knew that going in. But scoring from the blue line comes at a premium. You look at guys that can fill the net similar to Burns, and I can only think of really one other guy, Erik Karlsson, who also isn't fantastic at defense. So I mean, Burns, look at if. Burns is never going to be Vlasic. Burns is never going to be a shutdown guy. And that's fine. You accept him for what he is and you put him with the player that best gives him the possibility to succeed. I don't think that that is Paul Martin for the long term. I think they're going to have to find a solution there really, really, really quickly. But he's paired. Yeah, look at, but who wasn't mind like MIA during the last month going to play? Like the whole team was dog crap. I think to put that on Burns is it's there's a lot of blame to go around for how this team looked during the last month. And then when they hit the playoffs, I mean we saw what important key players were playing through. They were completely injured down the middle. Joe Thornton playing on, I don't even know how he played on. No ACL and MCL. I don't know how that happens. Logan Couture playing obviously through a lot of pain and then stupidly not wearing a cage or anything to keep his mouth protected and then taking extra punishment to the face was stupid. And I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It was really, really dumb. I know we're supposed to be like, oh, what a warrior, but honestly, it was just stupid.
So my question for you, and this kind of ties everything up in a nice little bow, and I think that Christine was reading my mind because I was just going to ask you, how do you think Joakim Ryan would do with Brent Burns?
That's kind of I know one of the last shows I did with Zach, I posed that question to him. Like, would he is he the guy that he would pencil in for future Brent Burns partner? And I think that's the guy. Like, if I think that's the guy I would pencil in. I don't think it's next year, maybe the year after. But yeah, Joakim Ryan's a guy I would absolutely like to see play with Burns and see what happens. The only concern I have with Joakim Ryan, obviously, is his size in the NHL.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, but at the same time, how many times have we, said that about certain players and then guys who are deemed undersized end up excelling at the NHL level?
It's hard though because Joakim, I mean, he's a two-way defenseman. He's not specifically a defensive defenseman, but I think like a lot of the guys that we talk about being too small are forwards. Whereas I think defensemen, I mean, you have to be able to, you can't be just be able to be pushed outside of the, you can't have a guy like Lucic come and just pick you up and drop you over, in the corner faceoff dot because he can't hold his ground in front of the net.
See, for me, and I say this as somebody who's watched a lot of Joakim Ryan the last 2 years, I don't think Joakim Ryan has ever shied away from from finishing a check. You know, he's shown he can be physical, and I think one of his assets is he's a really good skater.
Yes.
And he's a very cerebral player. He knows the right thing to do, and he doesn't ever panic, really, unless it's game five of the first round when he sails it over the glass, but that's a different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
My point is...
Sorry, I was just
going to say, I feel like despite the size concern, which is a legitimate concern, no doubt, I think Joakim Ryan in the long term would be okay with Brent Burns in the NHL.
I think so. I mean, I'm not saying he wouldn't. And look, at the, you know, the chat's kind of getting on me. He's like, Boyle was tiny. You know, he did all right. You know, Rinsky's kind of small. He does all right. These guys are more offensively minded than you, especially if you're playing with Burns. He's obviously, these are players playing in far more offensive roles than, whereas if you put Joakim Ryan with a guy like Brent Burns, kind of like he does with Tim Heed, you know, he has to be the guy that's coming back to play, you know, to play the other side of the puck too. Whereas, you know, a guy like Werenski, it was really good, and I love Werenski, or a guy like Dan Boyle, you know, they were the Burns in that situation. They weren't the Paul Martin, Joakim Ryan.
Right, and you know, like I said earlier, I think the view that Ryan has on the game, and I think his skating, I ultimately think that helps make up for his lack of size, you know?
Oh, I love Joakim Ryan, and I think he's going to be, you know, I think that, you know, he's a guy that I would pencil into that spot. I just, projecting, you know, at the NHL and actually being at the NHL are just things, and that's just because that would be my only reservation is his size, despite all the other check marks that we have for Mr. Joakim Ryan, who I'm incredibly high on. I mean, this is in my opinion the best defender we have in the system, period. There's no one even, you know, there's no one that close other than Heat. And
yeah,
maybe,
agreed.
Maybe, you know, and I think Jeremy Waugh is going to be a product. But I think talent wise, the talent's there, but he's going to be raw next year. And I think he's going to need some patience as far as Jeremy Waugh goes. So, but I mean, like even other guys coming in, I can't. We just need to get him some growth hormones. I agree. Yes, absolutely. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We just need to just pump him full of growth hormones, you know, growth hormones. He doesn't want to play in any international competitions, right?
Make sure you keep the Claritin away from him.
Right, yes, absolutely. Golly gee. Mike Nev saying, I'm not feeling Hurdle. I know we were talking about this today while you guys were talking. I was just kind of watching and laughing. Here's my thing with Hurdle. I think that, well, I think, you know, I agree with, I don't necessarily agree. I can understand where people are coming from. I can hear the argument that he's never going to be the center that the Sharks want him to be, and they won't let him be a winger. But I feel like if you trade him now, for one, his deal's really, really good, and it'd be stupid to trade that deal. But you're not going to get value for him, I don't think.
Yeah, and you know what? You bring up a really good point, too, because that deal is really good that he's on, and I feel like he's played really well as the third-line center, and you would obviously like the points to be there, but if he's not getting, you know, totally killed in his own zone, is it really a problem?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, even if you trade him, like, if you're going to try and get a guy of equal value, like, or, you know, of somewhat equal value, you're gonna probably take on a pretty hefty cap hit compared to what you're paying Hurdle right now. Or he hurts his knee again, but I mean, yeah, but injuries could happen tomorrow. I mean, we could sign Vlasic to a 8-year, $7 million deal, and he can blow his knee out the first game of it.
Yep.
Hockey injuries happen. I know that Hurdle obviously has more of a history of the knee injuries, which is definitely a concern at this point, but I don't know, man. I just if I just feel like if you are constantly just afraid of, you know, of an injury, I mean, I don't know. I guess you just probably shouldn't be a GM at that point.
So something else too that I want to bring up.
Sure.
Does trading Hurdle to another team make him less likely to blow out his knee again?
No, but then he won't be our problem when he does.
That's true. It just bothers me when, you know, individuals say, oh, we need to trade him because he gets hurt all the time. It's like, you can't trade. If other GMs are thinking that in their head, they're not going to want to trade him. Like, you can't, you can't just say, okay, you're going to take this guy and we're going to take this guy. Like, it's not NHL 17. Like, you have to want a certain player.
I was saying Hurdle and Bodker in a package. So look, yeah, I could see a player like Hurdle being used to make a bad contract go away. But I think honestly, Doug Wilson's too high on Hurdle. Like, he's far too high on Hurdle for him to go anywhere. Right or wrong?
I might be in the minority here, but I don't know why. I'm not really sure why this is a conversation topic. I think he's played really well. Even at center, I think he's played really well. I think we need to start addressing the problem, if it does become a problem, when he possibly signs an extension next summer and doesn't meet that extension. I don't think it's a problem right now, and I think the Sharks have more issues to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be worried going forward if, like, next year he, like, really rings the bell and the points aren't there next year to go with it. But, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see. Again, we don't know who's coming back. You know, Joe Thornton was at a Barracuda game, so he's probably back. Because that's what we're saying. He's at a Barracuda game. Let's do it. Why would you want to? I don't understand this. Why are you guys so obsessed with TJ Oshie? He had one good tournament.
And that I don't know if you guys know or not, but they don't play the shootout in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, I don't like I don't dislike TJ Oshie, but I don't think he's the answer the Sharks need.
I mean, and here's the thing, you know what? Yes, Oshie was good in his 2 years in Washington. I believe he had 30 goals this year, and I think he got close to 30 last year.
Yeah,
but you have to remember there were four seasons in St. Louis where he was okay at best. You know.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee that a guy like TJ Oshie would mesh with a Logan Couture or a Thomas Hertl. You know, stats are nice, obviously, but let's remember.
I'm just Devin worried Sidicucci, what that 33 goals would cost you.
That's exactly what I was saying. And open market definitely inflates the prices of some guys. You know, it's why. Yeah. It's why Brooke Orpik was able to get a 7-year contract as a traffic cone.
Oh, you know, that he was.
It's the open market is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, no, it really is. Like, I don't see it. Like, I understand that people. I look at, especially in a free agent class. This free agent class sucks, which means that, you know, values for guys are going to get even stupider because yeah, we totally covered Joe Thornton. Joe Thornton re-signing E5. I don't even know what I was saying before, but I just feel like in a bad free agent class like this, people are going to make a lot of money because teams are going to have money to throw around, and they're still going to try and want to improve their team. And I'd be very nervous about the money that a TJ Oshie will command on this soft of a free agent market.
Yeah, and you know what? The last two free agent frenzy days, the GMs have been really good with the amount of money and years they go in. So I agree. The thin market, and you get guys who kind of get desperate and panic a little bit, they're going to bust out those checkbooks, and it's going to be silly season all over again. And
right.
I'm hoping Doug Wilson stays out of it.
And I think he will, because he's not going to have money. Really, like, depending on who he brings back or what cost, I don't think there's gonna be money. just don't start the Tavares talk. Don't worry, you will get no Tavares talk from me, because I think that's all super Yeah, Bodker. But just imagine if Bodker is like him Hackles, except Bodker. Bodker's like Bodker's only fault is that he went UFA last season and not this season. Because a guy
Yeah,
like
right.
Bodker gets stupid money on the open market, even with the crap year he had.
You know what though, Ian? The day that John Tavares becomes an unrestricted free agent is 408 days away from today. And I don't know if you know, but 408 is the area code of San Jose.
Oh, well, there you go, guys. E5, E5. Tavares isn't coming to San Jose. Players don't come to San Jose. Like even with the success we've had, like we when have the Sharks ever gotten the big free agent? Never.
Who could forget Bill
Never.
Guerin?
You're right.
But they technically traded for him.
Right, no, and that's my point. Like you have to trade for people to get them to come to San Jose, and then usually once they're here, they're like, "Hey, this is pretty awesome. I will stick around." But San Jose's never been the destination for the big free agents because one, Doug Wilson generally doesn't throw out the stupid deals, other than Burns, which I mean, not stupid and whatever, but just the long term. Big money deals has never been San Jose's game. And look at there's John Tavares goes free agent. There's going to be a lot of places with, probably that are going to be in a lot better, not at the end of their window like the Sharks are, or maybe past their window with the window closed, but they just are too dumb to know it yet. We'll see what the Sharks are going forward. But I don't think that a guy like John Tavares is going to be like, yeah, I'm gonna go San Jose. Like, there's gonna be teams that are, John Tavares has sat in the Islanders forever, a team that's been basically atrocious the whole time he's been there. If he's leaving that, he's going to a contender. He's not going to help another team rebuild.
Yeah, agreed. And John Tavares is, yeah, he's kept that Islanders team afloat, if you
Right.
ask me. Like, he's been, I don't want to say underrated, but he's been so underappreciated in his time there. And I absolutely agree. He's going to want to go to a team where he can actually make a difference. And you know what? You think about it like this, when Tavares becomes an unrestricted free agent, he's still young. For how long he's been in the league, he is still young. He is, like I said, underappreciated. He's gonna command a lot of money, and it's like, okay, you can give him a lot of dollars and not a lot of years,
Right.
but if you want to go less dollars, jack up those years,
Yeah, 7 years.
There's no way to win in signing John Tavares unless you're moving, Joe Pavelski,
Right.
which is not happening.
Probably not. I mean, I would do that swap in a heartbeat, but
Oh, well,
alas.
absolutely, but just pick,
Yeah.
but just just picture the Sharks move Joe Pavelski because they're like, yeah, we're clearing cap for John Tavares, and then
Oh,
John Tavares is like, oh, that's nice. Okay, bye. I'm gonna go sign in Los Angeles.
I'm gonna have to answer a couple more questions here. We should probably get going because we'll be back here tomorrow. Well, I'll be back here tomorrow. You be back here tomorrow?
I don't know. Maybe.
All right, maybe we'll see. It could just be me tap dancing. We'll find out. Mike asking, do you guys think Chicago makes any major news? Any changes, could be some good talent in the market there. I feel like it's terrible as it sounds. I would try to find a way to get out from under the Hossa deal.
Yep.
But I don't know how excited I would be about Marian Hossa at this age. I like Marian Hossa a lot. I think he's a great player, but I don't know how excited that would make me, because obviously he's still going to command a pretty significant cap hit, and Chicago's not going to eat any of it. So, I mean, Hossa's the contract you got to try and get under, I think.
And you know what? I think Chicago's window is shut. I think they're too embroiled in cap hell at this point. I mean, they had a future with Brandon Saad and Andrew Shaw.
Right.
And, you know, they had to give up on those guys because they wanted to keep Patrick Sharp and Marian Hossa and Andrew Ladd for 2.5 months.
No, exactly.
And this is something that I've kind of thought about pretty much since Taves and Kane signed the extensions. But, you know, they've already won 3 Stanley Cups by this point.
Mm-hmm.
As Tane and... Oh, God. Taves and Kane, how do you not say, wow, we have a damn good team here. Let's take less money so we can continue to have a damn good team here.
And I feel like, I mean, at least Kane kind of grew into his contract, but Taves, Jonathan Taves is one of my favorite players. Like, you can see my little Jonathan Taves Team Canada guy behind me. But, like, I don't feel like Taves is that caliber of player.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? If Kane and Taves, like I said, if they did acknowledge the fact that they've won 3 cups and, you know, take that home, the glorified hometown discount. I mean, let's say you take $2 million off each contract, $4 million is another roster player who actually provides some kind of impact.
Yeah. You know what other contract they need to get out from under as well?
And Marcus Kruger?
No. Seabrook.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think that deal hasn't aged well either.
No, it hasn't. They've, you know, I think the Seabrook, I like Seabrook. He's a good defenseman, but he's not Chicago's number one defenseman. So why are they paying him like it?
Right.
And you know, kind of like Marcus Kruger too. Like,
yeah,
people like to talk about Bodker and Ward and stuff like that, but Marcus Kruger is the Blackhawks' 4th line center, and sometimes he's been a healthy scratch, and he's making $3 million.
Yeah, that's a lot for that's some Tommy Wingles money there.
And you know what? Terrible. They've already had to move on from Scott Darling, you know, and
that's true.
They're gonna be forced to choose. I'm thinking Anisimov or Hossa are gonna be gone.
Oof, that's rough. But what are you gonna do, right? Like, you have to somehow pay these guys, but they're getting too thin. Like, their depth is getting too thinned out. You know, a couple of injuries and they're done.
They've been fortunate enough to have Alex DeBrincat fall into their lap.
Yes, but I mean, and that's really. That's what you have to give them credit to, right? Like, you have to give them credit for the way that they've been able to draft really well and find the free agents from overseas and stuff to get value players at really no money.
Yeah, exactly. And Stan Bowman was able to get 2 second round picks for Andrew Shaw, so.
I think I tweeted when DeBrincat got drafted by Chicago, like, congratulations to Carolina on your acquisition of Alex DeBrincat in 3 years.
Oh my goodness.
All right.
Okay. The Blackhawks could just trade for Chris Versteeg again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. Would be pretty funny if Wingles doesn't get the cup again on the East and West. Oh man, you know what? Ottawa's just so bad, guys. They're so bad. They're just they shouldn't be this good.
I there's a lot of pieces of their lineup that I like. If I'm their GM, I find a way to kind of tweak that defense a little bit. But I'm a big fan of their forward lines.
They're all right. I just think their underlying numbers, though, are so scary.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like they're on their way to 18-wheeler off a cliff territory. You know,
they're punching so far above their weight class right now, and they've done it all play. I like it. Give them credit. I've said this every round. You know, this is a team punching above its weight class, and yet they keep going, and you know, they're all tied up with Pittsburgh. You know, I still think Pittsburgh's gonna pull us through, but you know, I give Ottawa all the credit. They get full marks from me because I thought Pittsburgh was just gonna steamroll them, and I know that Pittsburgh's had some injury issues and stuff as well. But man, you know, Craig Anderson. Yeah, and it's a Boucher. I get that it's a Guy Boucher team. That's so they can just be boring as hell. Oh man, yeah. I guess you know what is that's a good point. The Guy Boucher thing is a really good point because man, I'm glad I probably haven't been watching much hockey because if I need to sleep though, I'm gonna PVR them.
Yeah. They also, you're forgetting they have our Lord and Savior J.G. Pageau.
That's true. I do like Pageau. All right, let's get us out of here because I feel like we've been on probably for a while now. Thanks for coming on, by the way.
Yeah, no problem.
So for everyone else, just a reminder, Teal Town USA is the website that we are both from. Preds versus Sens is going to be boring as hell. If it gets to that point, TV executives, I think, I guess not on this side of the border, but definitely on your side of the border, NBC executives will be jumping out windows. So... you might as well get those suicide nets they have over in China for iPhone makers. Because you're going to need them in NBC headquarters if it's a Preds Senators Stanley Cup final.
Oh, what a world we live in.
Oh, Mike Nevs with the ultimate compliment. This was as good as a Sens game. I'm retiring. That's it. Anyway, guys, Teal Town USA, that's where you can find obviously all our stuff. I know Felix wrote something not too long ago, probably a week ago now, but that's just the state of mind that I'm in. I'll probably write something at some point soon too, I hope. I want to see all of you here tomorrow when we cover Game 2. Hopefully a much better outcome of Game 2 than we got tonight. Other than that, you guys know the drill. @hockey_jerk, @Ian blogs hockey. I almost said I read Pucknology, which I'm certainly not. @IanVlogsHockey, @hockey_jerk. You know, and then everyone else as well. So be sure to check that, subscribe, tell two friends, all that fun stuff. And just a quick matter of housekeeping before we move on. Obviously, Zach isn't with us tonight, unfortunately, and that unfortunately will probably be the way it is going forward. Which, you know, it's fine. This stuff happens. I just want to obviously take this time to thank Zach for the time that he did put in. Zach's a super busy guy, as far as all of you probably know at this point. So the fact that he gave us as much time as he did was obviously incredibly appreciated by me, and I have nothing but respect for Zach going forward. And, you know, as much as we will miss having him around to talk hockey with us, the show must end, will go on. So, obviously, thanks to Zach, but, you know, it is what it is. And we, you know, and we move on. So, with that, come back tomorrow. I'll be here, maybe tap dancing, maybe not. We'll find out. Have a good one. Be safe and have a good night. Bye.